yes, love is begging door to door, but finds the silence like no one lives there anymore. Rebellious love.
Welcome everybody to the Side Quest, a Midsummer VR's dream. I am Dolly Domofsky. Joining me is Sam Dixon.
Hello, friends.
Sam is calling in from his phone because he's having some type of headphone issues with his computer. But it's good to have you, Sam.
Yes, good to be here.
And we're joined by – I'm going to butcher your last name, David. I'm going to try it. First of all, is it a soft J or a hard J, or is it a Y?
You're going to go in full blind. Let's see what you do.
Okay. I'm going to say – David, I'm going to be exploratory with it. I'm going to say David Jagneau.
Oh, that's pretty close. Yeah, it's Jagneau. Yeah.
Okay, all right. That was close.
He took the accent off of it and he got it, yeah.
Cool. I was faking that accent. I don't know where that fit. Well, it's totally awesome to have you on the Side Quest. I've been following you for a while. A lot of the stuff you do at Upload. And, you know, let's just get into it. Give us a primer on who you are and what you do.
All right, sure, sounds great. So I've been covering the game industry for about 5 years now. First I was at the Coalition for probably about 3 or 4 years. Then about 2 or 3 years into writing for the Coalition, I started freelancing as well. So I freelanced for sites like IGN, Polygon, Vice, Motherboard. I'm sure I'm forgetting several. But then a few months ago, I joined Upload VR as the full-time games editor.
Awesome.
So VR is a huge, huge, huge part of my life. Now I eat, breathe, sleep, pee, bathe in, everything VR.
Hopefully you're not bathing in that pee.
Yeah, I probably should have thought about the order before.
Pee,
I said that,
comma,
bathe. Yeah, there you go. I mean, it depends on the game, right? I mean,
that's
some of the
true,
horror
yeah.
games are, you know, basically, might as well. Yeah, so I mean, that's me in a nutshell. VR is a big part of my life now, but I do still freelance some for other sites. Mm-hmm. You know, so the other sites I listed, I still send out pitches. I still work on stuff every now and then. So I try to stay abreast of all things gaming because it's just what I love. It's what I do. In my free time, I don't only play VR games now. I have a PS4. Now I'm playing Pokemon Go. I'm playing a new Final Fantasy mobile game. I play a lot of stuff just on everything. So just
sure.
gaming all the time. That's me.
Well, it's so awesome to have you. And like I said, I've been following your work around for the last couple of years, and I've seen a lot of the freelance work that you've been doing. And then of course, Upload has been booming as a place for VR and just news in general, which is very cool to see. So definitely thank you for joining us tonight. And I wanted specifically to have you on because one of the big topics we're going to talk about today is VR. There, as we all know, E3, I think even though VR has been around at E3 since probably 2009, 2010, this could be kind of the coming out party in reality, because we have finally had the Vive launch, the Rift launched, and we have the PSVR coming later this year. So this was the big push. Every booth had it, whether it was on the show floor, or behind closed doors, or in theaters, or whatever. So I wanted to kind of get to pick your brain on it. I thought it'd be a lot of fun. I know Sam and I are both super interested in it, I think so are our listeners and our viewers. So definitely thank you for joining us. And because you're our guest, I would love you mentioned some of the games you have been, you know, dabbling in. We always start off with what we've been playing, and I'm curious to see what you've been playing. So tell me a little bit about some of the things that have been taking up your time right now, VR or not. Either way is fine.
Yeah, sure. So obviously, Pokemon Go. Me, along with the rest of the world, I'm playing Pokemon Go. I think level 7. I'm almost level 8. I've been playing it too intensely. But I am enjoying it quite a bit. I have a lot of fun. My favorite part about Pokemon Go is the fact that it's got my wife playing.
Oh, cool.
She doesn't care at all about Pokemon. And unless it has Disney or zombies, she doesn't care about video games either. It's kind of a big deal that she's actually playing it. Other than that, probably the biggest thing I'm still trying to get through is Uncharted 4.
Okay.
I'm a good ways through it. I'm now at the, I guess, the part of every Uncharted game where Nate gets crashed on some deserted island and gets injured, and you know, he's in shambles trying to get back to whoever he lost or whatever. Every Uncharted game has the same
part. Yes. Yep.
And so I'm kind of nearing the wind down area, the big climax. I'm playing Doom as well. Haven't finished it.
Oh, cool.
I'm a serial game jumper. It takes me a long time to finish games.
We talked a little bit about that in the pre-show. Yeah. Our backlogs are probably, you know, things we shouldn't be speaking about.
Right. And I think if it weren't for the fact that I get paid to write about some games and actually finish them, I probably would never finish the game. That's a fair assumption on my part.
I totally hear, yeah.
Yeah. I think for VR stuff, I'm really, you know, I'm shocked because I'm really loving Fruit Ninja VR.
Oh, really?
I did not think I would keep playing that after I finished my review, but it is so addicting, and those leaderboards are so competitive. I actually got into a bit of a Twitter feud with the developers over who could get the highest scores. That was kind of a battle I had going for a while. They eventually won, of course, because they made the game. So
it's interesting about Fruit Ninja is whenever there's like a new technology that pops up, it seems like Fruit Ninja is the one to... That always seems to pop up. I mean, obviously with iOS and Android, it was right there. Then it showed up on Kinect, and here we are with VR. And Fruit Ninja is there an AR version of Fruit Ninja?
Not yet, but I'm sure it's in development.
Yeah, there exactly.
I would be shocked if it wasn't.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, I think the biggest VR game that I've played recently that I really really loved. It's well, I say biggest, but VR is overrun by indies right now.
Sure.
I think it was A Chair in a Room is the name. So,
okay.
Yeah, if you have a Vive or if you're interested in Vive, A Chair in a Room, highly recommended. It's a horror game. And it's on the room scale. It has the motion controller, so you're moving around the room, solving puzzles. And it's one of the first horror games I've played that made me really feel like I was in another place rather than just having a screen on my face. So I think it's a really, really solid game. It's made by one guy. So it's really
Oh, really? That's one of the interesting, and we'll touch on this a little bit later on, is just the way that indies have taken to VR has been pretty astounding to me, and the content they're putting out. I mean, we were at PAX East, and just the amount of VR stuff done by really small teams, the things that we had to try was amazing. I mean, the entire show floor there was indie VR stuff. So ability to enjoy VR is a bit hindered, obviously. So I have a Mac, which isn't super VR friendly at the moment. And I have a brand new laptop, which I picked up late last year and realized that it wasn't very VR ready. So I've been doing things like cardboard and so on. And we'll get to that later on. But I'm looking to dive into some more VR stuff. I did get a chance to try a lot at E3, but I'll table that for a split second. I will talk about what I've been playing. Pokemon Go, obviously, I think that's something that's just, it's become a phenomenon, and rightfully so. It's Nintendo, and I think Ryan, our managing editor, put it best on Facebook earlier today. He says, Nintendo is like the friend that constantly does something wrong, and then they do something right, and it's really right, and you don't know how to discipline them because they're always doing something wrong, but then they nail it once a decade, but yeah, it's been fun. Sam, have you been playing it at all?
Yeah, I've gotten a little bit of time to mess around with it. I think I'm only like level 6 or 7.
Yeah, I think I'm like 7. Yeah.
But yeah, it's been really interesting because I live semi close to a public library, so
oh, wow.
So there's a gym at that library, and like once a day it changes color.
So oh wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it's been interesting to kind of like go on a walk and be like, oh okay, at the beginning of the walk it was yellow and now it's team red. I'm like, no. So it definitely seems like there's a lot of people using it, and like now every time I'm like driving in a car and I see somebody on the side of the road constantly checking their phone, it's.
You know exactly probably, what they're doing.
Yeah, it's probably Pokemon Go, and it's so crazy that it's. I mean, it's Pokemon, so
right.
I get it, but it just seems like nuts that it exploded so quickly, so soon.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things where I think, and we have a, we're starting up a Pokemon Go mini podcast starting tomorrow, actually. But one thing that I found really kind of interesting is it isn't that it's just Pokemon. It's just that it's so easy to use. It's a lot easier than any other Pokemon game in the past, right? Because you're actually just holding up your phone and you're tapping, and it's as simple as can be. So my daughter loves it. She wants to go on Pokewalks all the time, which is great to me because I have a six-year-old who was like me at her age, just wanted to stay indoors and play video games. Now she wants to go out and walk around, and I wrote a quick article about it at lunch today. But you know, we walked for almost 4 hours yesterday without her realizing. I'm sorry, for almost 4 miles without her realizing we had walked 4 miles, which was, to me, that's awesome. And yeah, there's a lot of bugs with it. There's a lot of issues with it, but you know, they're doing a solid job of making it pretty accessible to everyone. So yeah, I've been fiddling with that a bit. I've been getting slaughtered at the gyms that I try, so I'm very bad at Pokemon. I guess that's one way to say.
Once the game first came out, I kind of got lucky and sprinted to level 5, just so I could take over a gym in my area and take a screenshot while I still had a chance.
Nice.
And, so I did that, and then ever since then, I've barely done much of anything.
Okay.
Kind of just coasting on my initial burst of, I guess, you know, success I had finding.
Sure.
I think one of the first Pokemon I found was somehow I just got lucky and find like a high, I think like 180 Pinsir or something like that.
Oh, nice.
And I just upgraded him a bunch, took a gem, screenshotted it, and I've been kind of focusing on that ever since. So it's,
cool.
I've been enjoying it, though.
What's kind of interesting is there's all these Pokemon Go meetups now at the Pokestops and at the gyms in the area. And I know we have a lot of folks, a lot of folks who own businesses probably that listen to our podcast. But if you own a coffee shop, if you own a sandwich shop, if you own anything and you have a Pokestop near you or on you, you can monetize the crap out of that. I mean, there are, you know, come on in and play Pokemon Go. We're going to drop a lure at 10 o'clock today and we'll get a bunch of people in there. So yeah, I've been playing that. I've been going through my backlog and with all the traveling I've been doing, I think my wife and I worked it out where out of the last 7 weeks, I've only been home like 1 week. And maybe this was basically the week that I've been home, or last week, I should say. So I haven't had a chance to sit and really go through any console games, but I did manage to go through, a Rise for the Xbox One, because I could kind of chip away at that one. That was one of the launch games. Yeah, it's not very good.
Tom's not here to give you crap for it.
Tom's not here to give you crap. It's a pretty game, and they keep reminding you that it's done with CryEngine. I think there may even be characters in the game that say we're made with CryEngine. But the plot is pretty bad. Stuff just kind of skips around quite a bit. And it's when you compare it to The Order, which was kind of Sony's cinematic action adventure game, The Order is way better than Rise. But you know, it's you can get through it in about 4 or 5 hours. So that's what I did. Just kind of chipped away at it and earned some achievements, I guess. But so I did that. I've been playing, I've completed that finally, ticked that off the list, and I've been playing Xenoblade Chronicles on the 3DS, which is a huge RPG. I love my big giant RPGs, but I'm never going to get that. I'm never going to finish that. I've had that going since last year around this time, and I still have Bravely Default 2 sitting ready to be open, which I haven't cracked open yet, but we'll see. There's not a lot of Nintendo games coming out the rest of this year, so I'm not too worried about catching up on all those. And then Forza Horizon 2, after playing Forza Horizon 3 at E3 and just loving it, it was one of my favorite games of the entire show. I kind of went back and started playing Forza Horizon 2, and I realized that I hadn't quite fully completed a lot of little mini missions. So I wanted to knock a few more of those off before I kind of put that game away for good. So, a lot of traveling. I'm not going to talk about any of the portable game, any of the other like iOS games that I've been playing, cause they seem to bore Tom. Thankfully Tom's not here, but I've been boring a lot of stuff. My daughter, for some reason, and please don't ask me why, because I have no idea, and I'm kicking myself for letting this happen, my daughter has become a fan of Sonic. So she watches like Sonic Boom and like old bad Sonic.
Modern Sonic.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
That's a parent detail right there.
She loves Amy, Rose, and Big the Cat. And, oh my Lord, it's totally on me. Anyway, she wanted to pick up, we picked up the Mario and Sonic Olympic Games thing for her, which it's not horrible.
No, it's not too bad.
It's not bad. It's actually just a kind of a collection of sports mini games, so it's fine. But she's loving it, so we're playing that. She wants me to, you know, play against her nonstop. And they do these kind of neat online ranking and leaderboards and Olympics kind of based things. So that's kind of interesting. So that's what I've been playing. And then, of course, as Dave mentioned earlier, you know, I'm looking at things on Amazon and wondering what's my next purchase that will inevitably stay at the bottom of some pile. Like Mega Man Legends is a prime deal. Or, say, yeah, Mega Man Legacy Collection, the 3DS with the gold amiibo Mega Man is a prime deal right now. And I'm like, oh, God, so close to jumping.
Hold on. Let me find this.
Is it really a prime deal?
It is. I'm clicking on it right now. Not showing up. It's on sale right now in Prime. It's a Prime Day deal. My network is a little bit slow right now because I'm still doing all this. But yeah, there you go. Good luck.
Some
Google. Yeah, go out quickly if you're watching this live. Get yourselves the Mega Man because that's like the one amiibo that is like one of the hardest ones. Maybe the hardest one to get actually when you think about it. Yes, that's what I've been playing. So, Sam, what have you been playing lately, bud?
Well, I was running a fireworks tent for at the end of June and July. So, I got a lot of reading done.
Nice, good.
Had a lot of fireworks.
This is a video game podcast, right?
I know. I got a chance to play a couple things. Also, thankfully, since Tom isn't here, I got to play a lot of Marvel. Well, I was about to call it Marvel Buddies. It's Avengers Academy.
Marvel Buddies.
That's a much better name for that game.
It really is.
And like that game continues to be both frustrating and adorable at the same time. They keep throwing events that are like nonsense, and of course, like this one, the one that's currently running is like a Spider-Verse event. I could care less about Spider-Man and all of his buddies, but like, man, do I just really have to have Black Cat and Mary Jane in my academy? So that's been fun.
Before you move on, I ended up picking that up after we podcasted last time. And I was really excited. I'm like, oh, cool. This game's actually kind of an interesting thing. Well, I ended up picking it up, starting to play it. And then I went on my cruise where I knew I wasn't going to have any connection. So I didn't get a chance to play up that. And I deleted. Sorry, Sam. Did we lose Sam again?
Nope. I'm here. Oh, sorry. Just had to.
You know, by the way, just for those, you know, five people that are listening live, Mega Man Legacy Collection is 100% planned already.
Oh no! Yeah. Okay.
This is also cool.
That must have gone pretty quick then.
Yeah.
Oh, good stuff though. There are a few gems, a few nuggets in this Amazon Prime. You're watching Amazon Prime live on the Side Quest. It's like we're just gonna run like an HGTV or HGN, HSN, whatever, one of those networks, QVC type of podcast here.
Direct.
Yeah, exactly.
Through us.
So anything else besides Avenger Buddies, Marvel Buddies?
I tried, it's the new, whatever the PlayStation Portable God of War game was called, Chains of Olympus, I think.
Yeah.
I tried that because, you know, I think I got about halfway through God of War 3 and then just kind of gave up on that. Mm-hmm. And man, do I remember why I gave up on that. Those games just aren't that fun. Like, I maybe, and of course, like, maybe through childhood, because I remember God of War 1 and 2 being real good. But, like, maybe it was just that was the only thing to play on, like, PlayStation 2. So, it was great. But, man, I don't know how I feel about, combo-based third-person, like, essentially side-scrolling games. Now, obviously, that game has, like, 3D camera, and it's not side-scrolling. But, I just don't know how I feel about those anymore. Because they all just tend to be, like, repetitive. You learn, like, the combos for, like, the specific characters, and you're pretty much just locked into those at some point. And there's, of course, like, you know, unlock these combos for more interpretation. But do I really need to do that if I'm just doing fine without them? I got a couple, I guess, levels deep in that and kind of gave that up.
I'm in the same boat with... with God of War, and I'm kind of glad after they showed this new updated version at E3 because I was getting very tired of it. I played the first couple. I had the collection for the PS3 for 1 and 2, and after that, I just couldn't get into it. So I'm glad that they're kind of rebooting it in a weird way.
Yeah, well, and you know, I'm much more willing to play like sort of like the Order's like 8-hour guided experience as opposed to like 8 hours of like, all right, well, I'm going to mash these buttons and then Medusa is going to try to spray some stuff at me and then I'll rip her head off and like, use it as a weapon. And
again. You did it like the last 8 kind of war games.
Yeah, the last 8 rooms. But this one spawned 3 Medusas as opposed to 2 and like a couple archers. So.
There was an old NES game that was essentially, it was like a cross between Zelda 2 and God of War. Do you remember that? It was like Olympus or Gods of Olympus or something. I'm trying to remember the name.
Familiar, yeah.
But it was like almost like a Metroidvania Zelda 2 Greek god based game. Now I'm gonna
That's similar to the Kid Icarus games.
Yeah, yeah, in a way it was. Yep, yep. Anyway, sorry to interrupt you.
Oh no, that's. I mean, I also got a second to play. Well, I played through Volume on PC. But then I just picked it up on Vita again because, Vita and PS4, because I guess if you own one of those copies, once PlayStation VR comes out, you get the, like, he's doing, like, a VR version of that. Like, I think it's just going to be a couple of playable levels. But kind of like,
Coda, I think it's
yeah, but kind of like the Star Wars Battlefront, like, X-Fighter VR experience, they're just going to do, if you own the game, you get that for free once the game comes out. So it was on sale for like PlayStation's like midsummer sale last week for I think like $3. So I just grabbed it.
That's a good idea.
That game's so enjoyable. And I think really what we'll get to VR stuff, but I think like what I want to play the most in VR is less like, oh, I'm flying a spaceship, I'm a spaceman. And more of like looking into like little diorama worlds and being
granted
able to, like,
you are kind of a spaceman though, Sam.
Sure.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you. Yeah, we'll get into it. So, by the way, the game was called Battle of Olympus. So we were close. It was published by Imagineer in Japan and by Broderbund in North America. Remember Broderbund? Man, wow. Years ago. Excellent. Well, I guess since we're right on the cusp of it, let's just dive into talking about VR because I think it is the big topic that's guiding a lot of what game development is going, you know, going forward with. And Microsoft brought it up during their conference for the Xbox One that the Scorpio has got a souped up processor, partly because they want to help run VR-based games on there. And then obviously we have Bethesda's working on a lot of VR stuff with Fallout 4 that they showed at their event, and obviously PSVR. And you have Oculus, you have HTC, you still have things like Google Cardboard and the Gear and so on out there. So the landscape for VR right now is huge, and it's growing. It's going to keep growing over the next few years here. And we're really just at the very beginning of it. And E3 was the, again, it was, like I said, a big coming out party. And there was a lot of stuff there that I had a chance to try. And Dave, I'm curious, there's a lot of the things that you had a chance to experience. And a lot of the things were very cool to me. There was, just to kind of set the stage, I think just about everybody at SideQuesting is super excited for VR. Everything we've tried has just kind of, you know, knocked us off our feet. Things have been awesome. There have been some weird little badly designed experience or shoehorned things like that whole Final Fantasy 15 VR thing at E3, which is just, oh my gosh, that was bad. And then there was some kind of nausea inducing things, or the developers didn't quite have stuff calibrated well. But for the most part, VR has been awesome, at least from it being able to showcase you know, worlds to us. But at the same time, there's some, because of some of these issues, and because of how long it is taking to get hardware out there, software, and there's some folks, and myself included, I'm not necessarily pessimistic. I'm holding off on a lot of that hype, even though I'm really excited. There's parts of me that says, hold on and wait till there's actually something out there that you see that is interesting, because it does often feel like there's a lot of these neat little experiences but nothing big and fully fleshed out. So I kind of want to get your thoughts on both of your thoughts on that notion. But Dave, what did you see at E3 that was good, that was great from a VR standpoint?
I think the hands down game of the show for me at E3 from a VR perspective was Star Trek.
Oh, really? Oh, awesome.
Absolutely incredible. Because I think for me, a lot of VR games do a good job of establishing that sense of presence. You know, there's a lot of games that make you feel like, you know, I have my hands, mm-hmm. I can move around in this virtual world, I can look, I have head tracking. So all that stuff is already established. A lot of people know how to do that well. But the one thing that hasn't really been tapped yet is social VR. And I think that's really the true key to making something really, really immersive and something you want to keep going back to. Because, you know, you look at MMOs and games like that, or the multiplayer games that people play, it's that social connection that keeps people playing and coming back for more. Mm-hmm. And VR doesn't have anything like that yet. There are multiplayer games out there like Eve Valkyrie, which is a great shooter. It's a lot of fun. You know, and then Riggs on PSVR is fantastic. I love it. But it doesn't have anything that you couldn't get from a non-VR game, which is what I think Star Trek does really well. And the reason for that is because the way it works, the Star Trek Bridge Crew is the full name of the game. It's made by Red Storm and published by Ubisoft. And everyone takes on a role on the bridge of a Star Trek ship. So, you know, imagine, you know, you're on the Enterprise or whatever, one person's the captain, you're going to have someone as the helmsman, you know, steering the ship, there's an engineer, we'll have a tactical officer. So there's all these different people that all take on different roles. And it really forces you to work together, and it makes you feel like you're in a room with other people, even though it's all VR. And the reason for that is because, you know, I'm sitting at my desk, and in VR, I have the controllers with my hands, and they fully model all of your arms and your body. Everything's fully modeled. It's not floating hands like a lot of VR games are. And whenever I'm sitting there, I can look over my shoulder, and I can see my captain, you know, sitting back there behind me. I can look to my right. I can, you know, give a thumbs up to the helmsman over there. And we're interacting while we're playing the game. And it really makes you feel like you're sitting on a ship with other people. And it's really collaborative like that. So that game was, it just blew me away. It was so much fun. Like, I'm not even a huge Star Trek fan, and it just, it was incredible.
I think those are the kind of experiences that I've been really waiting for. I didn't get a chance to try, by the way. I didn't. But those are the kind of experiences that I'm really looking forward to from a VR perspective. Because, yeah, I mean, I try Fallout 4, which was just Fallout 4 that I could just kind of look around in 360. It wasn't anything different.
Frankly, that was too early for them to showing that. I was shocked that they showed that at E3 because it was, you know, you had like a pistol and a fat man. You didn't even have hands yet. It was a floating gun and a floating pitbull. So I was a little surprised that they actually showed that.
Yeah. And there were other instances of similar things, both at E3 and at things like PAX and so on that were similar. That I don't want to say they're shoehorned VR, but you can tell when a game is designed for VR, like Star Trek is, or even I think there was a game called Blind that I got to try a few months back. And then games where VR is, so here's just the VR mode that you're just kind of looking around in 3D space. And to me, you have to design that from the ground up. You have to say this is a VR experience, and that's what's going to make this game special and different, or this experience different. And Star Trek was one of the ones that, I didn't get a chance to try, but seemed like it was headed in the right path. I'm curious if it could be a full game or just a kind of smaller social experience. But then at the same time, I'm not sure yet what VR needs to be. Is it going to be kind of like this smaller, almost like mobile phones, app-based thing where people are more interested in these shorter experiences? Or is it something where, you know, I want to put a headset on for 4, 5, 6 hours and just be completely immersed in this, you know, longer, deeper experience, I guess. So I'm personally still trying to decide, trying to figure out if it could go either way, or is it trying to do too much by trying to satisfy both?
I think it's probably going to take a path similar to what the original incarnation of the game industry looked like, you know, back in the 80s. You know, a lot of games people drop $40, $50, $60 or more, depending on how you look at inflation. Now, a lot of those games were super, super simple. Mm-hmm. And those were what people played back then because they didn't have anything else. And the way I'm kind of looking at the beer industry right now is, you know, a lot of people compare it to the modern gaming industry, and there's a lot of overlap. And part of that's primarily because developers are porting over non-VR games into VR, and they're trying to kind of double dip into both sides of the market. But I think, like you said, the most sophisticated and best types of VR are the kinds that are built from the ground up for that platform. And I think a lot of people, you know, if you really experience something that was built for VR and it really, really kind of caters to your interests and it really taps into, you know, what you look for in a form of interactive entertainment, then, you know, VR is, it's a new medium. It's not just, you know, a different type of monitor or mm-hmm. a peripheral that you plug into, you know, an existing system. In a lot of ways, in my opinion, it's a brand new medium. And part of that's driven by the fact that it changes the way you interact with things. You know, if you're playing a VR game, you're not just pressing buttons on a controller. You're moving your head around. You're actually inside of the world. You can move. You have depth. You can feel the presence of the environment. You can walk around. You have your hands. You can, you know, all of that stuff really contributes to changing the way that you interact with something. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes beyond just even games. You know, there's a lot of 360 films that are incredible. People are using VR for medical purposes, for education, for, you know, all different kinds of stuff. And I think VR has applications beyond gaming in a lot of ways. I think that might be where the, you know, the best versions of VR are really realized outside of games. But I think for now, I'm perfectly happy playing my current Ninja VR or, you know, playing those other kind of simple games here and there. But I do think there's plenty of room for the deeper experiences, too. And I think part of that comes with people getting, there's the term, their VR legs.
Sure.
You know, getting more comfortable and, you know, understanding, like, okay, you know, play for an hour or two, take a break, and then maybe in a few years it'll be, you know, people can understand and kind of stomach longer experiences. And I think it's pretty much like with anything. There are some people that can't play a console game for more than an hour or two without, you know, feeling motion sick. You know, so
or 3D. You know, some people can't see 3D at all. Things like that.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. So I think
motion.
It's a brand new market, and it's still trying to figure itself out. But you know, I'm super excited to see where it goes, and I think, you know, this is just the beginning.
You know, what's kind of interesting about VR is it really is, and it reminds me, I'm going to touch on Pokemon Go real quickly here. Pokemon Go is this phenomenon because it's not necessarily, it wasn't so much that people see Pokemon on a phone and they download it. Nobody cared, you know, somebody in their 40s or 50s probably didn't care that Pokemon was on their phone, but they went out and they saw all these people doing it. They became curious and they wanted to try it, and then I think it just happened to be Pokemon that they were all trying. And when you look back at the Wii and how, and the Kinect, even when people wanted to try it because everybody saw everybody doing it, it was a very kind of social type of thing that you wanted to get up. You wanted to do what other people were doing. And you wanted to, if you owned something like this, you wanted to show it off to your friend. You want to say, hey, check out the Wii or check out the Kinect or whatever. And I think VR is probably headed on that same path where, like my daughter, and we have this, we reviewed this, just a really simple little, almost like a Google VR. This is one of those little things you dock your phone into. It's completely basic. It's quite literally just a holder for a phone. But it provided my daughter, who's 6 years old now, and I think we got it when she was just about to turn six, when she was five, her first VR experience. Blew her mind. I mean, granted, the visuals, when you shove an iPhone in the thing, with like the three apps that were available at the time were not good, but to her, virtual reality was awesome. I mean, she felt like she was in a completely different world, and it was just like a flat, you know, 360 view forest that she was looking in. So it's one of those things I definitely feel like we're going to need to show it off as fans of VR and users of VR. We need to show it off to our friends and family. And I'm not, you know, I don't know if people will be hosting, maybe they are hosting VR parties at their house. I mean, that when the hardware becomes available, maybe this becomes more of a thing. But I think the social aspect is what's really going to sell VR, and not necessarily, hey, you know, it's going to be more like somebody's at your house and you're going to say, hey, oh, what, you want to check out the VR? I have it sitting over here, and watch the Pearl Jam concerts in VR instead of hey, everybody, Star Trek is in VR. Everybody pick up Star Trek. I think it's maybe more of the former, or it could be the latter. I'm not sure.
I think you're totally right. You know, I have a Vive at home, and so I've been able to kind of do some small VR parties, I guess you could say. And the things that people keep going back to are the things that kind of mimic stuff you can do in real life, because I think that's where it kind of convinces people how immersive it is whenever they can, you know, put on a headset and suddenly they're on a golf course playing mini golf. You know, and you can pass the headset around, take turns, you can, you know, go play basketball, you can do, like, you know, ping pong, you can do stuff that you normally would have to leave the house to do, but instead of sitting on a couch with a controller in your hand, you're standing up, you have these controllers up here, you know, and physically, like, actually holding it, like, I'm holding, you know, like, a golf club, I'm, you know, shooting hoops with a controller like that, there's boxing and stuff, all those kind of things, I think, kind of a similar to the Wii, but a more advanced version in a way, is, you know, the motion and the immersion of the room scale is what I really think is the future of VR. And, you know, that's not going to be for everyone. You know, there are some days where I come home and the idea of putting on a headset is just disgusting to me, and I'd rather sit on the couch and, you know, have a controller in my hand or have my Vita or my 3DS, and I don't want to think about VR. And, you know, that's someone that, you know, VR is, you know, because of VR, it's my full-time job. But, you know, there are some days where I don't even want to do VR stuff. And that's, I think that's fine. You know, it's another option. I don't think it's trying to replace anything.
Right. I totally agree. What's been kind of interesting for me from the standpoint of VR is that, you know, you see conversations of folks that they say VR is the future of gaming. And I don't necessarily know that yet, just because the cost of VR and and I'll pick your brain in a second about kind of the different levels, but to get a proper VR rig in your house, at least right now, to get like the Vive and have the room available to do it, it costs a lot of time and a lot of money, a lot of effort. So to call anything in the future, experiences might eventually head that way, but it could be it could evolve into something a little bit more different, you know, for all we know, with a mix between AR and VR and holograms or whatever. But I think from my personal standpoint, I don't have a computer that can handle VR well. So I'm leaning towards the PlayStation VR as my option. And I think that's perfect. It fits in my living room. I already have the Move controller, which I haven't used in 6 years, I think, when they first came out, the clown nose version of the Wiimote. But I know it'll work, and I know I have a device that can utilize it. And I think from that standpoint, it's great. Granted, I haven't quite seen any games yet. I mean, Riggs was kind of interesting. There hasn't been anything that from the launch lineup of the PS4 that I've been looking at that is going to make me put down Dishonored 2 to play. And I think for maybe that's where what's personally fighting me is just my time. And I mentioned my backlog. I'm going to be focusing on these bigger games and knocking out Dishonored 2 and knocking out, you know, whatever else launches this year towards the end, instead of having the time to enjoy these deep and immersive VR games. Cause there actually isn't going to be a lot of those for the PSVR when it launches. Sam, what, you've had the chance to try VR and you've played with, the Oculus, maybe some other things, PSVR. What are your kind of thoughts about where VR is and where it could be heading?
Well, yeah, I think I've probably, out of all of us, I probably have the least experience with it. I just messed around with it at PAX East there when we were just there. And I think it's interesting. The mentioning about, like, the social thing, I know a lot of the PlayStation games, you're going to have those with the social screen experience, that I think they're calling it, which is, you know, while somebody's in VR, something else is happening on the television that people can enjoy. And I think the one thing that I saw about that, I think it'll kind of work like karaoke, where, you know, you're not quite sure you want to try it out, and then maybe something on one of these second screen experiences makes you go, oh, well, if that's what they're doing in there, maybe I'll check it out, and, like, pop in there and see what's up. And I think it was a demo for the Job Simulator 2085 or whatever it is, where they were showing, like, the I don't know if this was for the PlayStation or if it was for another device or if it was just for this video that I was seeing, where they, like, the people that were watching the, like, second, the, like, social experience were watching, like, a video feed of that person in the game, just with their, like, normal, like, body, like a video camera taking their body, and then just doing, like, seeing what they were doing in the VR, like, you know, when they move to their right, they're flipping the burgers or whatever. And I think really that's, like, the type of stuff, like, using VR parties or just having friends over is really the type of thing that made the Wii catch on and will probably end up being, like, the answer to at least getting people, getting them in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, like, the long experiences, I played Faded at PAX East, which seemed like a great game, but as somebody who plays a lot of games, it did give me motion sickness, which is the 10 minutes that I actually spent with it. And I just don't know, like, what type of experiences would make me want to sit down and play multiple hours. You know, like, something like Volume, and if the VR experience in that runs like the game, it's like levels can be over in like 15 seconds if you're playing it. So you can play it for a handful of minutes and then go to something else. And I'm just worried that, like, we'll see, you know, Sony spent a lot of time on, I think it's Flashpoint, during their E3 presentation,
yep.
Which is going to be, which is going to be, like, a, like, full length, well, maybe not a completely full length, but a, like, very long experience, a first-person shooter in a PlayStation VR. And I just question if people are going to be willing to sit down and actually crank through a full campaign on the level of something like a Call of Duty campaign in VR. And of course, I guess if the checkpointing is good, you could effectively spend like an entire week going over one level if you wanted to. I question whether we're quite ready for what companies seem to think VR is ready for. I don't think it's going to do poorly. I think PlayStation VR is probably going to be the thing you see on everybody's like top five items to get people for Christmas lists. I think there's going to be plenty of good experiences out there. I just don't know about the longevity of projects and even like the smaller stuff. Like once you've played through it a handful of times, are you ever going to want to go back?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think, David, you bring up a good point with what VR can be, which is it can be more than games. And that's actually where I'm probably more excited about VR rather than games is some of these other experiences. I mean, we were jokingly in my office saying, wouldn't it be great if, and there, this kind of exists in a weird way, wouldn't it be great if you could rent a seat at a sporting event or a concert and it's actually just the VR you know, the cameras and the audio, and you spent $50-$60 to sit at home and go to this concert, and you have it in full 3D and full VR, and you're hearing the audio, it's all happening live, or a sporting event or whatever. I mean, when you think of like pay-per-view, people going to see UFC fights and things like that, I mean, that could be a really awesome way to experience what VR can offer. It's not necessarily games, it's the whole entertainment aspect. And though there are some companies and publishers and stuff talking about it, I think our little corner of the internet really kind of focuses on the gaming side. We don't necessarily see a lot of the entertainment aspects. I mean, if you go on, you know, you go into the app stores on a lot of, whether it's PC or Mac or even iOS and Android, you see some entertainment type stuff, but it's not nearly as fleshed out as what I think it could be. But maybe that's just coming. Maybe there's just time and effort needed to put some of that together.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You know, there are tons of companies working on that already. There's, you know, the Final Four for the NBA was live streamed in VR. There's a lot of NASCAR stuff that was live streamed in VR. A lot of it, the big hurdle is just the technology.
Sure.
It's very, very difficult to live stream, you know, two 4K images, you know, one for each eyeball with, you know, 360 spatial audio in real time. And there's also all the concerns about advertising, you know, what do you do? You know, do you just have a constant stream whenever there's, you know, downtime? Do you put in commercials? Do you not do commercials? So there's a whole lot of concerns that are kind of being discussed still, I think. And No, but there's a lot of companies working on, you know, sporting events for as a definite, you know, huge area. There's, you know, all kinds of opportunities there, like we were kind of alluding to just now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that would be fantastic because I've been to a lot of, you know, football games and stuff like that. And sometimes you can get some really crappy seats, you know, like
yeah.
It's almost like you wish you could just stay home or you just tailgated and watch from TV in the parking lot or something. You know, so I think having, you know, being able to feel like you're there is a really big aspect of the American dream. And the biggest concern that I have, and I think a lot of other people have as well, or stuff like that, is the obvious thing is, you know, when you're there in person, it's a social atmosphere.
Sure.
You're surrounded by other people. It's hard to capture that idea. And I think that's kind of the biggest hurdle for a live sporting event like that. For games, it's not as hard to capture because stuff like Star Trek and other games are doing a good job of bringing the social atmosphere. But if everyone's live streaming the same seat, how do you really communicate the social aspect of it? Do you, you know, create an entire portion of the stadium where everyone is, you know, duplicating the same view? Do you, you know, what, I don't really know what that looks like exactly. But there are some other applications, too, that you may not really, or your viewers may not know too much about. One of the companies is called AltSpace VR. They're doing really, really cool stuff. They have live stand-up comedy shows. So Reggie Watts, oh, wow. He's a pretty well-known comedian.
Mm-hmm.
He did one of the first live VR comedy shows where people were able to kind of come into the world of VR, and they essentially duplicated and mirrored the club that he was performing in infinitely across however many rooms they needed to. So the audience could be inside of this one little area, and the audience was duplicated, you know, forever, essentially. So once this really picks up, you know, instead of having the limitations of an auditorium, you know, comedians could sell an infinite number of tickets and still perform in the same venue inside VR.
Mm-hmm.
And, so, like, they're doing comedy shows, general, like, talk shows and interviews. AltSpace is really cool because you can also play D&D in VR,
which oh, cool.
is fantastic. I wrote about that for Motherboard. And it's great because you have, like, a table sitting in front of you. You have all the miniatures, all the different tiles. Everyone has their character sheets kind of in, like, a hologram sort of, like, web window next to their avatar. And so it's not like those other implementations of D&D where it's, like, Roll 20 where you have, like, a static 2D screen in front of you. Instead, mm-hmm. you're, like, actually in a tavern with a tabletop moving miniatures around and rolling dice.
Could you imagine Hearthstone in VR set up like that?
Oh, see, that would be fantastic. And, you know, yep. or like an AR version
mm-hmm.
of a game. Like, I would die for an AR implementation of Magic the Gathering.
Oh, yeah.
That would be one of my dream games.
Yep.
If I could put on some glasses, sit across the table from a friend, and we just have that right there. Or I know a lot of other people that have been PPL, but I never got into media. So Magic the Gathering is what I care about.
And I think those are the kind of things that actually really intrigue me for VR. And I'll mention one. So I played Hitman Go in VR back at PAX East, which it's Hitman Go, which is already a great game. It's a fun game, and I've been playing that. You know, I played that in Lara Croft Go. But having it in VR, having it in 3D with this game board, this game table sitting in front of me, was a complete. Not everybody felt the same way, but it was a completely unique and fun experience because I'm sitting in a room. I'm basically sitting on the floor playing Hitman Go tabletop, and it was awesome. And yet to that point, I'd love to play tabletop D&D or, you know, Warhammer or Magic the Gathering or Hearthstone. I mean, could you imagine Hearthstone playing against
really
a friend in VR?
It's called Dragonfront. It's basically Hearthstone of VR. That's essentially what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So you have like different troops that you lay out in front of you on the battlefield and set the cards. And, you know, the battle plays out. You know, you have different avatars sitting across from each other. What they did is they built an entire trading card game, like a combat card game from scratch physically. Mm-hmm. And then they put it into VR. And it works out really well. I played it at GDC a bunch, and it's one of my most anticipated VR games. It's fantastic.
I think one of the cool things with VR, one of the opportunities is that because it does, you know, it does cost more than what a traditional game console gaming device entails. There could be opportunities for product manufacturers to partner with folks like Comcast or AT&T or whoever and rent these, you know, rent a headset for a month or for a year or whatever. You get it subsidized somehow and it becomes part of your plan, because VR could be, they were doing that a little bit with 3D for a while, back when they were 3D television stations, like the whole four 3D television stations they had for a week. But VR could really do some interesting things from that standpoint. And I think that would help make things more accessible to folks who maybe just want to try it out and see what they think. Maybe there's a whole travel experience. You're on a cruise ship for, you know, doing all these different events. We just got back from a cruise and loved it. And I thought it'd be great if I could somehow share that event or something like that to prepare my friends and family that went with us what a cruise is like. So, maybe what VR is right now is, instead of thinking of these kind of vertical pillars, like it's gaming and it's movies, you know, maybe it's more horizontal where you have some gaming stuff going on, some educational stuff, some film things happening, some da-da-da-da-da. So it's not, you know, certain things aren't necessarily shaking out as being the top focus of VR at the moment, but I think maybe it's more horizontal than it is kind of vertical stacks.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, the last little bit, we're coming up on 10 o'clock Eastern time right now. So the last question I wanted to ask was, there are obviously some different-ish VR formats, right? We have Oculus and Vive, and if you have Revive, you can play some, you know, do some interesting things. You have Google Cardboard, Gear VR, you have PSVR, and so on. And there are a lot of different headsets that are popping up from different manufacturers as well. So how do you see a lot of this shaking out? Do you think there's going to be a more standardized format soon, or is this kind of a long term? People are still kind of developing the format. What are your thoughts, David?
It's kind of hard to say, because, you know, at the core of the devices, the Rift and the Vive are extremely similar. They're you know, architecturally they're almost identical. You know, technically they offer a lot of the same features, at least whenever the Oculus Touch comes out. They're going to be virtually identical. But as of now, there's kind of this divide between the two where, you know, Steam is kind of the marketplace for Vive games. Then you have Oculus Home, which is kind of the primary marketplace for Rift games. There are still a lot of Rift games on Steam, but there are no Vive games on Oculus Home. A lot of Vive games don't offer direct Rift support, so it's kind of this, like, sort of this war going back and forth between the two headsets. And it's a little frustrating, and a lot of fans of VR are very frustrated because, you know, I think a lot of PC gamers in general just are against any type of segmentation. They want all open everything. So there's, you know, a lot of difficulty in kind of pulling that fan base. And then beyond those two, there's, you know, the Gear VR, and there's Google Cardboard, and there's everything else. All the other stuff, I think, is irrelevant for the most part as far as the Western market's concerned. I know there's a lot of niche companies that are finding success over in China. But as far as the American market goes, there's the Gear VR, which is pretty much the gold standard of wireless VR right now. And then there's Google Cardboard and, you know, the Immerse, like you pointed to, and all the others that you plug your phone into, but then they're essentially just plastic versions of the Google Cardboard, which, you know, they offer a decent experience, but I do think, you know, the Gear VR is a couple steps above that. It offers a lot more quality. It offers, you know, curated marketplace. It offers, you know, more dedicated developers. You know, the headset is nicer. The, you know, the gyros in it are better. It has the touchpad, all that kind of stuff built in. So it's a better experience. And then, for me, I love the Oculus Touch controllers. I think that as far as ergonomics go and comfort and just the way that they feel when I'm playing the game, I like them better than the Vive controllers. But the Oculus doesn't support 360 room scale tracking out of the box. There are ways that you can kind of, I guess, you know, set up the cameras whenever Oculus Touch comes out. to where you can sort of get room scale, but developers aren't supporting Rift games as room scale because Oculus is telling them that it's not officially room scale, which is kind of like this threshold that a lot of the VR games have, is they want to be able to get up and move around their room in 360, and a lot of Rift games aren't going to be able to do that, even after the touch comes out. Then you have the Vive, which is, you know, a lot of people consider that to be the most open, the most flexible, the most versatile, but also the most complicated and less intuitive of the bunch. I think, you know, the average consumer, if they were to order a Vive, even if they have a $1,000 gaming PC, a lot of them are going to have trouble setting the Vive up. It's not simple. You know, you have to go through a lot of setup processes. You have to update the firmware on controllers and on your cameras. You got to do a lot of stuff. There's a lot of hurdles to jump over just to get it running. And you have to kind of maintain it by updating stuff, which I think is, you know, something that a lot of consumers aren't really used to do. And so I think, you know, going back to what you were saying earlier, PSVR, I think, is going to be the most popular one, at least for the foreseeable future. Because, you know, like you were saying earlier, is, you know, if, you know, a kid writes down that he wants VR for Christmas, you know, mom, you know, dad, they're going to go into GameStop, and the only VR headset there is going to be PSVR. And I think, you know, most kids are going to have PS4s already. 40 million people have them. And all you need to do is drop $400 to $500 to get a PSVR headset. The bigger bundle comes with PSVR World, which is like 5 mini games packed together. You know, Playroom VR is going to be free. There's going to be a whole bunch of free games and demos, I'm sure. So, you know, a few $100, the price of a console hits you PSVR, which I think is going to be, you know, hands down the option for a lot of different people. You know, me included. If I weren't working in Upload VR and I wasn't provided a Vive in a nice computer from the company, I would be doing PSVR, and that's probably it. I got the Gear VR earlier this year before I started Upload. You know, that and PSVR is probably all I would have. And I think that's going to be the case for a lot of people.
Do you recommend people who are interested in VR go that PSVR route initially before they dive into something like Oculus or Vive? Or do you suggest, you know, for those folks maybe like myself who are interested but not necessarily ready to drop a ton of money in?
Well, I think if you don't have the PC, then I would just wait and get a PSVR.
Okay.
And the main reason I say that is because, kind of going back to what you were saying a little bit earlier, Sam, is, you know, there's not a whole lot of games on VR right now that really require you to invest more than an hour or two. You know, if you really love something, then I can see you going back to it, like Job Simulator. Mm-hmm. You can get through all of those jobs. You can play the entire game in, you know, less than 3 hours. You know, 3 to 4 hours is probably the general kind of watermark you're looking at. And, you know, if that's a great game to show to friends. It's a lot of fun. But it's like $30, you know, so like that's not really going to be worth it for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And PSVR, you know, a game like Rigs, that's something you can play every day. It's good. It's competitive. You can play with friends. It's going to have a huge user base of people. So there's going to be games like that on PSVR at launch that I think the Vive and the Rift are still struggling to find even months after they come out. And part of that just goes to the fact that Sony has a huge stable of developers that and just crank out amazing games that, you know, a team of 4 to 5 people working in their basement can't do on the Vive. You know, and that's just kind of the result of the market right now. I think the Vive's really cool, and it's great for people that love to get in early and they're early adopters. But if you're a gamer that's interested in playing VR games, I think waiting on PSVR is probably the better option.
Okay. And, you know, obviously it's still so early. We're going to be having revisions of hardware coming out, you know, as things go along. Xbox One, with the Scorpio, we'll see how that shakes out.
Yeah, they didn't even announce a headset, so I don't even know what that means. Like, are they just going to partner with the Rift? That's kind of what I expect, you know, because the Xbox One controller comes with every Rift right now, so they have that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm also wondering, like, what does that mean? Does that mean Oculus Home is going to run on Xbox?
Right.
Kind of weird, because then Microsoft would probably want a piece of, you know, all of the sales, and Oculus doesn't seem...
It's
crazy.
Didn't Bethesda show Fallout 4 on the Vive at their...
They did, and Xbox said Fallout 4 is coming to the... So, yeah,
exactly, yeah, so
it's
who knows?
It's confusing.
Yeah. But, I, you know, it's an exciting time. whether you're holding back like I am a little bit on PS4, you know, maybe going into the PSVR route just because it's the most affordable one, and easing your way in, or maybe you're going all in. I have friends who are so excited about VR, they've already laid out the space in their basements for the Vive. I think there are definitely advantages to being on both ends of the scale right now and everywhere in between. And it's still so early. We will get to the point where we have the really thin glasses, or maybe it's more, maybe the end may be a mix between VR and AR for all we know, but it's definitely an exciting stuff, and looking forward to it. I think it's the kind of thing that gaming needs, just an injection of something that's different than just kind of where console gaming has been, staring at a flat screen for years. So with that said, Dave, thank you so much for joining us. It's been awesome having you. Thank you for kind of giving us some of your VR wisdom, just a taste of some of the wisdom you have. And I'll make sure, everybody make sure to visit, Upload VR and see what Dave's been doing there. Cause there's been some awesome features you guys have been putting together over the last, that's definitely over the last couple months since E3. So, it's great stuff you have going on over there. Where can we find you, Dave? Where can people look for you?
Well, they can obviously go to uploadvr.com. That's, I'm the games editor there. So pretty much all the video game and VR game coverage on that website goes through me in some way. They can follow me on Twitter at David_Jagneaux. That's JAGNEAUX. That's a bit of a mouthful. So hopefully, I'm sure you'll link that in the, yep, description, mm-hmm, and everything like that. Those are really the main two areas that you can find me. We do have a podcast over at Upload VR. It's been on a hiatus lately, but it will be coming back probably this week or next. It usually posts on Fridays, and it's all about VR games.
Cool.
So we recap the news, then we pick kind of a big discussion topic to talk about. So if you're really interested in VR and learning more, you can definitely check that out. And otherwise, just follow me on Twitter. That's where I post different stuff I write, different stuff I complain about. pictures of my dog, my corgi. Her name's Luna.
You got a corgi? That's always welcome in our feeds these days. Yeah. Trust me.
she's pretty perfect. Not gonna lie.
Awesome. Very cool. Thank you so much again, Sam. Where can we find you?
I am SamVI79 on Twitter. Follow me for the hot scoops on bad ideas I have on a daily basis.
And fireworks tent sales stories.
Yes, yes. Oh man, don't park your horse next to my tent, please. That's a real thing. I had to ask somebody.
We have to make sure we get that on a shirt.
There's
an idea for a developer out there: a fireworks tent VR simulator.
Yeah, it's a lot of sitting and saying the word "unfortunately." Those are illegal, so I cannot sell them to you. I think I recorded one day, I think I said the word "unfortunately" about 700 times. I've decided that I'm gonna, like, in the month of August, just cut that word completely from my vocabulary and see if I can get creative anytime I need to use that word. I posted a photo of me mowing the lawn and a weedle popped out. I don't even know what my life is anymore. So if you want to help me find out, just tweet at me.
There you go. Yeah, tweet at Sam. And you can find me at Dolly Domofsky. You can find SideQuesting proper at SideQuesting on Twitter, SideQuesting TV on Twitch, and I think SideQuesting TV on YouTube. I'm not 100% sure. Wherever you're watching this. With that said, thank you, everybody, for joining us, for listening. Please, as we always say, rate and review us, comment on this post, comment on YouTube, share the podcast. That helps so much. It helps us bring great people like Dave onto the show. And Dave, thank you again for joining us. Really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot, and I'm really excited to go forward with more VR stuff.
It was great. I had a lot of fun hanging out with you guys.
Thank you, and everybody, we'll see you guys on the next Side Quest. Peace, love. Dances in a fever at the Castle Rock. Dust devil.